We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Halliburton. A deep three for the lead!
And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away! Hits the three at the buzzer to win the game!
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hit!
But this is Indiana.
Throws it down!
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what's going on? Welcome back to your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. We're here to talk about Indiana's 127-125 victory over the Toronto Raptors in an emotional game where Pascal Siakam made his return to Toronto for the first time since being traded. And here to talk with me about that from The Athletic, he's no stranger to you guys. It's James Boyd. James, what's going on, man? How are you?
Living a dream, man. Obviously, seeing Siakam be victorious in his return is a nice positive way for the Pacers to end this first half of the season, which isn't the first half, by the way. It's just what everyone says about the NBA season. That's good. I'm doing good. I'm excited for All-Star Weekend here in Indianapolis. Obviously, Tyrese Halliburton starting. There's just so many things going on this weekend that I know I won't sleep very much, but who cares? This is like a once-in-a-lifetime, you know, opportunity right here.
No, it's awesome. I think the city is buzzing. It looks beautiful downtown, everything they've got ready. So
yes.
If you have not been downtown, I highly recommend, even if you don't go to the events, just go downtown, get a feel for what's going on, hang out, maybe you'll see somebody at a restaurant. You never know. But this game tonight, obviously an emotional one with Pascal returning. Did not start out the game very well, but kind of closed things out here for the Pacers. Hit tough basket after tough basket. Put this team on his back in the fourth quarter, and Rick Carlisle even deemed it Pascal Siakam night, baby. So 23 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, gotten some foul trouble, ended up having 5 fouls, but I just thought this was such a great way for him to kind of go in there and get this victory. I could tell he really wanted it, and he had a nice drive there at the end to kind of give the Pacers a little bit of a cushion. So, you know, I've enjoyed the Pascal Siakam play since he's been here. Obviously, it's been a little bit up and down in terms of all the injuries, everything that's been going on, but just a great opportunity for him to get a victory against his former team.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, you talk about the injuries, the ups and downs. He's been like their one constant. Mm-hmm. Since he's gotten here, and that's one of the reasons why you make the trade. Obviously, you make the trade with the idea of everyone being fully healthy, but in moments like this where you're missing Miles and Benedict's out and Tyrese is still kind of working his way back, you got Siakam who continues to just be this consistent present on offense and defense. And what I like about his game is he's got the – how do I describe it? A – like non-sexy game, because I'll like look up and I'm like, wait a second, he has 20? How? Because it really isn't flashy. It's just efficient. I mean, the flashiest thing he does is his signature spin move, which everyone knows is coming, and it still works anyways. Yeah. But, I felt good about what I saw from him tonight and what I've seen from him so far. And I think, reading Caitlin Cooper, other people in Tony East as well, Dustin Dupirak, obviously being around the game myself, writing my own pieces, like the malleability adjective that's been described about him or used to describe him is very true. Like, his game just translates, I feel like, with any team in the NBA, and the Pacers are just fortunate to have him.
They really are, and they really needed him. Like you said, all the injuries have been piling up tonight. The Pacers were without Miles Turner, Benedict Mathurin, Jairus Walker, Jalen Smith, James Johnson, and then Aaron Nesmith goes out in the first couple minutes of the third quarter, injures his shin once again. So just injuries piling up, and, it felt like the Indiana Pacers are back, because that used to be the question every
don't,
single
don't,
game.
Don't, please, no.
You talked please, about it. No. I remember Tony always saying, like, Rick was getting so annoyed because it was like every time before a game you guys would ask, like, hey, what's the injury report for tonight? So it's been piling up. Hopefully things get a little bit better, but even Carlisle said it. They were without three of their top seven guys tonight, and he put Jalen Smith in his top seven, which I thought was an interesting little bit of a quote there from Rick Carlisle. But, Isaiah Jackson had to step up and play the starting center spot tonight. Pretty efficient night for him, 15 points, 7 of 13 shooting, also had 11 rebounds and 4 blocks. I just, Isaiah Jackson's kind of out of the rotation now when Smith and Turner are healthy, but still having a guy like that in year three that can step up and provide really big minutes for you, I think that's huge for this team, and I thought he played really well.
Yeah, and I think one of the things is seeing Isaiah, and you got to remember when I covered them, this was 2 years ago, so seeing them now, I'm like, wow, I covered him during his rookie year, and now he's, year three, put on a little bit of weight, and I think this speaks to his professionalism. As a young, especially the young basketball player, because it is hard to go from being, the man basically your entire life to now you're trying to crack into the NBA rotation to be a rotation guy. And I thought when his number was called tonight, he did well. Obviously, I think he's more efficient now on offense because he's just gotten stronger, a little bit more patient as well. And then even defensively, one of the biggest things we would always get on him for, and it's still to this degree, like, man, you jump a lot, right? You're always jumping. But I think, you look at what he had tonight. He had the 4 fouls, but he also had 4 blocks, impactful blocks, obviously, in a 2-point win. And so I think Isaiah is someone who, you're still trying to feel out and just see what is his ceiling. How far can he take this thing? And it speaks to the talent, I think, that this team has had recently versus what they had in the past where, it felt like some of those games where I was covering him in 2021, 22, before the Halliburton trade, it was like, a lot of guys, I would say, beyond this Pacers sphere win, people wouldn't know. And so now you have this roster where it's what I call a good problem. It's a good problem that you have to force yourself to find Isaiah Jackson minutes because Jalen Smith looks so good in his role, and obviously Miles is having a career year.
Yeah, and I mean, Tony East has brought this point up too on his pod, and I think that it's been, it's a really good point. Like, Isaiah, the big thing with him was getting into foul trouble. And one of the things is it's the quality of fouls that he's getting now that are better because they're fouls when he's maybe trying to block a shot compared to, can't set a legal screen and gets caught moving before he sets the screen, which he's notoriously bad at, or the dumb fouls when he gets beat on a rebound where he'll just grab a guy because he's
yes!
mad.
Just, oh my gosh.
So it's like, yes, it's like Isaiah Jackson is learning how to not commit dumb fouls, but hey, if you get off the ground because you're a shot blocker, like, we can live with that. And one thing I do like about him is he's just kind of a chippy guy. He's not going to – if he fouls you hard, he's not going to help you up. He's just kind of stares at you like, get up, And I think the Pacers need some more nastiness like that from guys that just don't really give a crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And what's funny is you get a perception of a person based off what you see them play like, right? So – some people who might not know Isaiah Jackson, maybe on like a deeper level. And I'm not saying I'm best friends with the guy, but I know him a little bit better than like the general public. He is very, very nice.
Yes.
Very outgoing. When I talk to him in the locker room, he's always, pretty joyous and smiling, all those things. But there is that switch that gets flipped to where he's like, I'm trying to win. And like you said, you need guys like that on your team who kind of set the tone, whether it's defensively, whether it's a hard foul, whether it's a kind of like the old school no layup rule type of thing. And I think he embodies that. I think Aaron Nesmith to a degree embodies that because he's always hounding guys. you know, dive on the floor, fouling a guy hard. TJ McConnell had some of that to his game. And so one of the knocks that on the Pacers, I think, especially early on in the season and when Halliburton first arrived, was, oh, they can score, they can score, they can score. But, like, are they tough enough in certain moments? And you do need those grit and grind moments, no pun intended, for Memphis fans out there. But you do need those moments like that. And I thought the end of this game sort of showed that, where they, I think it was like the last 3 minutes, it was like they were 1-for-10 shooting. Mm-hmm. Toronto, that was. And then obviously the huge stop by Ben Shepherd on RJ Barrett.
I mean, yeah, let's just talk about Ben Shepherd, because clearly this might have, this was his best game of his NBA career, because not only did he have the huge stop on RJ Barrett, which I loved how he was able to absorb contact, I believe, three times on that possession, but didn't foul and didn't kind of give up his ground. I really enjoyed the way he stepped up really big there. I called him Benjamin Stonewall Shepherd on Twitter just because that's what he was. He was a stonewall. But let's not forget, he hit two clutch threes in the fourth quarter to kind of help give Indiana the lead. And I thought, if he can shoot the ball at a pretty good clip moving forward, I know it's going to take some time to get consistently familiar with the three-point line and that kind of thing with Ben Shepherd, but if you can play defense like that and be in a positive or just an average guy on offense, like, it's going to be hard for Carlisle to not play him, especially with how thin this team is now after trading Buddy Hield and Bruce Brown and not really getting any guards back in return.
I agree, and I think you hit it right on the head. Simply put, 6'6 guys in the NBA who play defense well, knock down threes, get paid a lot of money. And teams are always looking for them to add to their roster. And like you said, after you get rid of Buddy, those minutes open up. And there is some hesitation there. You're like, okay, how much can a rookie handle? Is the stage too big? But I think every step of the way, Ben has been very diligent about just learning as much as he can, absorbing as much as he can. I asked him the other day, or not the other day, but probably last week sometime. And I was like, hey, man, like, you know, how are you navigating your rookie season where, you know, one night you might play 15 minutes, another night you might play 30. And he was saying how, like, James Johnson and, you know, TJ McConnell and Aaron Nesmith have kind of taken him under their wing, where they're showing him what it takes to be a professional, what it takes to stay ready, and then what it takes to capitalize on your moments. And we saw that here tonight, where I think in previous games, we saw the defensive effort. We saw the hustle, but it's like, man, Ben's not making the shots. And that's what he was drafted for, really, right? We knew the scouting report did not say, at least at the top of the list, you know, pretty good on-ball defender. It was, he's a knockdown shooter. And So if he can, you know, add that element to his game, and obviously having a longer three-point line takes an adjustment period. But if he knocks down those threes, man, there's no reason not to play him. And I think he could actually help this team, you know, make some noise.
Absolutely. And I mean, the Pacers are lucky that they were able to keep the distance from Toronto by knocking down 11 more three-pointers than Toronto tonight. You know, outscoring them by 33 points from the three-point line is huge, considering they got dominated in the paint by 30 points. It's pretty embarrassing, 84-54. I mean, Toronto is not a good outside shooting team. I think they're 28th in the league since they've traded Siakam. So it's just one of those things where we know they're going to get a lot of their points in the paint. But this is a team that James had not cracked 100 points the last two games, and they dropped 71 on the Pacers in the first half. So it felt like, you know, the Raptors were kind of trying to right the ship a little bit in Indiana. I felt like they absorbed all of that, all the punches that Toronto threw, and they just kept chipping away. And I think that's one thing that I've liked about this Pacers team is even when their backs are against the wall, they've been able to find a way to win. Even against a team like Toronto that's, you know, bound for the lottery, I just felt like despite the bad numbers, a lopsided numbers on the rebounds, points in the paint, and that kind of thing, Indiana still mustered out a victory. And I think that's just a credit to Rick Carlisle and his staff and in terms of how they just figure out ways to make adjustments to close games, even if they're not necessarily dominating in those areas you'd like to see them dominating in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's kind of like baseball. You have to be able to win with like without your best pitch most of the time, or sometimes you can't just, you know, always go out there and buzzsaw teams with their high-powered offense. Like tonight, even though they scored 127, this wasn't a, you know, all-clicking cylinder game for the Pacers offense or for their team and their identity. And so, to me, I like to judge teams based off like their bad games, so to speak. Can you win without your best stuff? Can you win ugly? Can you win the ones you're quote-unquote not supposed to? Because as much as we like to harp on the fashion in which games are won, all that matters is, you know, for seeding purposes, is do you have more ones than the seventh seed or the eighth seed or whatever it is? And so I think that's a good thing. And they've shown the ability to close in certain situations. However, I want to ask you this. Do you think the Pacers maybe play up or down to their competition? Because that to me is a little bit, I'm not like terrified. I'm like, oh my God, this team cannot, can't like win. But there are moments where I'm like, eh, did you kind of get lax or what's going on here? Why are you, you know, going toe to toe with obviously an in season tournament? Haliburton was healthy. That's a factor, of course. But like some of these games, the Charlotte game the other day, I'm like, what's going on? Like, why aren't you, you know, fully engaged?
Yeah, no, I definitely think that there has been some overlooking of teams. You know, even Portland's been able to beat them twice this year. Charlotte's been able to beat them twice. They lost to Washington on the road. And I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into it. Like, we know that Charlotte with PJ, not PJ Washington, I'm getting their roster confused already. Grant Williams, Miles Bridges, just the wings that they have. And I think that's been something that's problematic for the Pacers, is just going up against teams that can do that. And we saw Portland do this a little bit. You know, they could play Jeremy Grant at the five and he could really attack them as well. I thought it was interesting that Carlisle did not adjust against Charlotte by taking Turner out and maybe going a little bit small ball five with Siakam at the five, Toppin at the four, just because that's what they did against the Suns when they had Kevin Durant at the five. And so nothing against Miles, but I feel like it's just an unfair advantage for him to try to defend in space against a Miles Bridges, who is much, much quicker than him.
Yeah.
Even Grant Williams to that point is probably quicker off his feet. So I think there were some matchup things, and Charlotte's now won three in a row since making the trade. So maybe they just got a little bit of buzz in them, no pun intended. But I do feel like they have played down to their competition and they've talked about it. But I think Tyrese Haliburton said it best after that game. You know, we got to grow up. We're a young team, but we have to grow up, and we can't overlook these teams. Like against Toronto, I give them credit because Toronto pretty much healthy for this game.
Yeah.
Indiana had a lot of injuries last game before All-Star break. I don't want to hear anything about, oh, they're tired, they're ready for the All-Star break. All 29 other teams are tired too, and they're all looking forward to it too. So let's not just dismiss that as well, James, because that to me is just a cop-out of an answer. If you're a professional team trying to make that step from being a lottery team to a playoff team, you can't allow yourself to have mental lapses and lose games like they did to Charlotte, like they've done throughout the season, because that's what's going to separate you from being sixth seed or seventh or eighth.
Absolutely. And I think, to me, this is a playoff team. This is what you're shooting for. When I was talking to Haliburton after the Buddy Hield trade and, you know, asking him what his goals were and what he's like, man, I just want to win. I want to get healthy. I want to win. And so as much as we harp on Buddy Hield, oh, he's never been to the playoffs. Tyrese hasn't either. Now, he's had less of a time in the NBA, but you think that doesn't bother him? You know, like he's had the individual success to this point. He's on track to be perhaps an all-NBA talent this year. You know, he's proven he's arguably one of the best, if not the best, when he's fully healthy, point guards in the NBA this season. I know people are listening like, all right, what? I'm not saying he's better than Steph Curry. I'm just saying, I will stand by this. I will fight over this. He was legitimately in the conversation as best point guard in the world in the league at one point this season before the injuries and stuff like that. Mm. That's fair to say. But that doesn't mean as much to him as being able to get in the playoffs. He got a taste of it. They got a taste of it as a team in the in-season tournament. But that's what you're chasing. And I think that, you know, obviously whatever way you get into it is fine. But if you can avoid the play-in, if you can handle your business, I think that shows signs of, like you said, Alex, like you're growing up. Like you don't want to wait till like, you know, March to figure that out, right? You know, you can grow up right now if you want to. And so he's leading that charge. Like, obviously, health has a lot to do with it. I know we're talking off the podcast about how much he has going on with his schedule this week with All-Star Weekend, but you just hope that he finds some time to rest, rehab, recover, and get ready for what should be a very important and pivotal, you know, quote unquote second half of the season, because I think there is a lot of, you know.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Movement to take place. You don't want to be moving too much, you know, with where you are at right now. You're in the sixth seed. You're in a good spot. And I think, you know, you want to avoid, it's even just thinking off the top of my head, like if you can avoid the play-in games, that's a little bit more rest, a little bit more health and all the factors that might help you, you know, make some noise and really, you know, try to get out of the first round. Because I think in my mind, I'm like, if the Pacers missed the playoffs, that would be like a devastating, like, you know, season or whatever. So in my mind, they're in it. And now it's like, okay, what can you do once you're there? So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the quality wins they've had this year, it does make you realize, okay, they can't compete with the best of the best in the league, but they're just not consistent enough. And that's where a seven-game series will be interesting to see how they match up against some of these upper echelon teams in the Eastern Conference. I think that Rick Carlisle, with his experience and his ability to make the right adjustments, is going to be huge. And getting past Gal Siakam, this team definitely took a step back in terms of how they're going to be offensively, but I think they got better defensively by getting past Gal Siakam and then going out there and allowing Andrew Nembhard to play more at the two, because I feel like, while Buddy Hield is a very quality three-point shooter, Nembhard does provide much better on-ball defense as well as secondary playmaking that Buddy Hield did not provide at the same level. So it's definitely a different dynamic, and you can see why this team's offense has dipped about 10 points per game since Pascal Siakam was traded here. So they're trying to find that right balance, because we know Rick Carlisle said it a couple of months, probably about a month or two ago, you know, she's a really good looking girl, but can she play any defense? Right. So it's like,
you know what? That is a great quote to have on Valentine's Day, my friend.
It
For
is.
Those listening, if you're evaluating your girl right now, can she play help side defense? Can she, you know, ice the screener? Can she play drop coverage, and does she communicate? You know, no, but that I think you hit it right on the head right there, man. They got to be able to hang their hat on something other than where this running gun team that can get up and down, because I will tell anybody willing to listen, when they get in the playoffs, and I'll say when, because I think that it will just be kind of shocking if they just fell all the way out. When they get to the playoffs, things will slow down, and you have to be able to find other ways to kind of reinvent yourself. Like, you don't want to change too much of your identity, but it can't just be, oh, we'll just outscore them, or we'll just, you know, beat them in transition, because the game will slow down. I think Halliburton's game will translate to the half court, where he can, you know, break down defenses and get you in good spots. However, you want to do some of your work early as well throughout the regular season, so that you're not, you know, having to play perfect, so to speak, in the postseason. You can have some, you know, some leeway, or so to speak, when you get to the postseason, and then kind of know who you are and it kind of been battle tested. Because, like I said, the NCAA tournament was good experience. Even this game tonight was good experience. You just want to build on that and gain some level of consistency. That way, you're not, you know, going to the playoffs saying, "Well, I hope we play this version of basketball," where it's like, "No, we could just play our version of basketball because what we've been playing has been consistently, you know, good enough to get it done."
I agree, and I think, you know, one thing that we need to see develop too more towards the end of the season is just that chemistry between Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam developing. Yeah. It's still not there all the way yet, and I think they're still trying to figure each other out. And even tonight, you know, you're sitting out there. Siakam's not a great three-point shooter. Andrew Nembhard's not a great three-point shooter. However, he was 2 of 3 tonight, and then Isaiah Jackson is not a three-point threat at all. It does kind of clog the paint a little bit more in terms of what they can do offensively, and there was times when I would see – in the offense, guys were trying to cut, and they were kind of in each other's way because their similar players are going to the same spots because they're not shooters. So that's where you do need Miles out there, Aaron Nesmith out there, guys that have shot the ball pretty well from three this year. And it's just a learning curve. So I'm not too worried about that. But I thought Halliburton tonight, for this game, 21 points, 12 assists, 4 rebounds. Really didn't look like himself completely still yet. I think he's about 85% there, James, maybe 90, getting closer and closer as we see it. But it's just really good to see him kind of getting himself back, because this team only goes as far as he can take them, even with Pascal Siakam there. Pascal Siakam's a great running mate next to him, but this is Tyrese Halliburton's team, and he's really going to have to be who we saw him be in that in-season tournament game against Boston in the field house, just hitting those big dagger threes and setting guys up. I mean, that's how this team is going to be efficient. But I'll just tell you this. It's a totally different team, because go back and look at when they played the Bucks. Their five-man lineup to close that game was Nesmith, Buddy Hield, Bruce Brown, Turner, and Halliburton. And that's a lot of shooting, and that's a lot of space, and that's a way you can really spread out a Bucks defense like that. When you have non-shooters out there like Nimhard and Siakam, it does make it a little bit harder to get an advantage with points in the paint, because you're just not able to spread the floor as much. So I think that Carlisle's going to have to figure some things out a little bit differently here, but maybe it's just, hey, can Nimhard and Siakam become more respectable three-point shooters to open up this offense? And hey, I would love to see it, because I feel like if they can, that's just going to make this team even more dangerous.
Absolutely. I think I talked to Caitlin on her podcast maybe last week, and she was telling me, you know, Nimhard only has maybe like less than 10 threes this year that are like, you know, unassisted or whatever. And so his shots are going to come off creation, and can he consistently knock them down is a whole nother point as well. I think Siakam, one of the things that I actually enjoy about his game is that, you know, that corner three is very valuable. And I think that he's hit it at a very high rate. And so maybe they can implement that more into their offense, where, you know, obviously he's never been like a volume three-point guy, but if he can get one or two up more per game from the corners, you know, maybe, and because he can shoot it well. I think Siakam, to his credit, at least when he's been with the Pacers, he's shot it pretty well from three, where, and then he's also hasn't been like pressing to just kind of change his entire game. He's taking them when they're there. And I think, again, expanding maybe to the corner options could help. And then overall, as far as the chemistry with him and Tyrese, I think with Tyrese, and I'll never forget when Kevin Pritchard was comparing him to Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck before he even played his first game for the Pacers. And I was like, this dude is delusional. I was wrong. So, you know, at freezing cold takes, I was very wrong. He's shown the ability that he can be the number one. And there was at some point this season where I was like, man, is he good enough to be like really top 10 in the league? Because those guys obviously change the trajectory of your team, your season, your franchise. And so I think that he's a true like number one type of talent. I think Siakam obviously has proven he can be a number two on a championship team. He did it when he was, you know, perhaps not even as good as he is now. And then you look at the rest of their roster, you got to show to me the building blocks for someone else to be enticed to perhaps join you. You know, I think right now this Pacers team is fun. They're competitive. They're a playoff team. They're going to be a team that you probably don't want to see, because it's going to be a lot of up and down and running, and there are going to be games that might get out of hand. However, I think you're just this long-term goal, you know, hearing Chad Buchanan talk about the team, you're kind of auditioning and showing the rest of the league and these players, okay, here's how we do it in Indiana and why we can build here and win big. And so that's the end goal. But I do think that the building blocks of, you know, Pascal Siakam, Tyrese Halliburton are good ones to have, because they are, you know, pretty easy to fit around even a third guy, so to speak. So I'm excited. I do want to see maybe some more Jairus as the season goes on, just to kind of see what you got there. But obviously, like you said, some changes had to be made offensively. The spacing is different. The lineups are different. And maybe even, you know, they won't be practicing obviously during the All-Star break, but it just gives the coaching staff and the team more time to kind of go over like who we are. Because even with Siakam, I asked him about it. He's like, man, I haven't been to a restaurant out here. I haven't got a place yet. I've been living out of a suitcase. I've just been going and going. And now you get to slow down and kind of reevaluate where you are. Like, instead of treading water, maybe you can start swimming upstream.
Yeah, I mean, 15 games in like 29 days, the day since he's been traded. It's been like a game every other night. So it's been a very busy schedule for Pascal Siakam. And I'm just hearing you talk about, like, you know, this team and how they're built. And it really just feels like, you know, if Benedict Mathurin can just step up and take that next step.
Ideally, yes.
That's really what the Pacers need. And I'm kind of excited to see what he looks like in a playoff series, because I felt like he played pretty good in the Boston game. I thought that he was okay against the Bucks, had some up and down moments on that game in Las Vegas, but against the Lakers, he was their best player in that game.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I feel like he kind of gets up for those games, and I'm feeling like he could be the X factor for the Pacers if he can really step up and just take on that role. But I do feel like, and I've mentioned this the last couple of podcasts, so I'm probably overkill here, but I just feel like how they're kind of constructed now, they're a little bit more predictable in terms of how you guard them. And it's just so much attention is on Mathurin with that second unit, because you saw tonight without McConnell, like, you know, McConnell's the only guy out there that can be an on-ball creator. Obi Toppin did it a few different times, but it's like, he's more of a catch and shoot kind of guy. McDermott's mm-hmm. catch and shoot. Shepard's more of a catch and shoot. And you mentioned it, Jairus Walker, like, it would have been a great opportunity for him if he wasn't on G League assignment or returning from G League assignment to be with the team in Toronto tonight, because even Oscar Tshiebwe, you know, two-way guy, got 3 minutes tonight. So you could have maybe seen at some point Jairus Walker getting some minutes at the small ball five and things like that. It would have just been really nice to kind of see. But, Obi Toppin, though, I feel like he's kind of figured out his role a little bit there. He's still going to be inconsistent. And I know Rick Carlisle pulled him. I forget. I think it might have been against Charlotte. They pulled him early because he didn't get rebounds. He was just kind of watching the ball go right by him. So 15 points from him, 5 rebounds tonight, and then Doug McDermott finally got a little bit going there, 13 points, but just 5 of 12 shooting, 3 of 9 from 3, still has not shot the ball particularly well in terms of percentage-wise. But I don't know. I just feel like at this point, are you taking a step backward by playing McDermott over Shepard at that wing spot next to Mathurin? And that's kind of where I've been like, there's not really a lot of buyout guys. There's not a lot of free agents out there that make more sense than Doug, but maybe the guy is right there on your bench and Ben Shepard. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about that. Maybe too small of a sample size for Doug, but I don't know. I value developing more than an older guy that's not doing
particularly well. Yeah, he's 32. Obviously not getting any younger. He's on an expiring contract. Will he even be here next year is a valid question. I do think it's a small sample size maybe for both, because we saw, you know, Ben have a really good night tonight, but it's like you got to see more of that to consistently give him minutes. And whereas Doug is kind of the inverse of that, where he hasn't shot it well in these few games, but he shot it well for 10 years, you know, you know, so I think that there's value in that. However, the ideal situation is that you want Ben Shepherd to be in that role and to kind of have that opportunity. But I think that that's why they made the move for Doug McDermott. It was kind of like an insurance policy, so to speak, where, you know, his one skill that has kept him in the NBA is that he can shoot. And so I'm not even worried about the numbers. Obviously, you want them to be better if you're the Pacers, if you're Pacers fans. However, I'm not panicking when it comes to him just because he shot it so well. Mm-hmm. And unlike Buddy, he probably has a more like defined role. And if anything, Doug's been in a position where he's had different roles throughout his career that he's had to adapt to, and he hasn't had all of the fanfare, so to speak, you know, when it was in San Antonio, when he was playing in San Antonio earlier this year, I think there was the lowest minutes of his career since his rookie year. So he's not going to be a guy that's going to come in and be like, well, I should be starting, I should be doing this. And he kind of gets it. He kind of understands his role and what it means to the team. And now, like I said, it's like another good problem, you know, in a way where, you know, if Shepherd comes along, good. If Doug starts shooting like he's supposed to, good. Then you can really pick and choose. Okay, do we want the veteran experience, or do we lean more towards Alex's approach, where we, you know, value our development of our players? So we'll see. But from a personal standpoint, Shep's just a nice guy. So it's hard not to, if you're a Pacers fan, I imagine, not to root for a guy who's nice and plays hard.
Yeah, I think his breakout moment was clearly against the Nuggets when he kind of helped spearhead that fourth quarter comeback when the Pacers fell short.
That game was cracking.
He had some really big moments, the big steal where he should have got an and-one, didn't get the foul call. But, yeah, I mean, you're right about Doug, though. He does know his role pretty well. And I think if you're the Pacers, you're thinking about it from this perspective, like, okay, we can have Mathurin and McConnell, two non-shooters, really, even though Mathurin's gotten better from three this year,
mm-hmm.
with Jalen Smith, who shot the ball incredibly well from three this year, surprisingly, McDermott, who's a really good three-point shooter, and then Toppin, who was also a good three-point shooter. Maybe that's enough floor spacing to allow room for operation there for Mathurin, right, to kind of get into the paint. So I do understand all that. I wonder about Doug, and you mentioned him playing with the Spurs the last couple of years. They've been a bottom feeder in the NBA, and
yeah,
you know, I always kind of go back. Now it's not the same deal in terms of like what they meant to the team, but when Evan Turner was traded here from Philadelphia for Danny Granger in that deal, he was like, man, I was looking forward to my offseason. I wasn't even thinking about making it to a deep playoff run. And so then your mindset's already kind of turned off as you've lost so many games. And now that could be kind of the same situation for Doug. He is probably a little bit older than Evan Turner was when that trade happened. So maybe he can flip that switch a little bit differently. And the role clearly is not the same. But whenever you trade for guys that are in losing situations to help you win the last 30 games of the season.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's just
they weren't just losing. They were like, yeah, they were down bad, like not even a chance of, you know, having a winning season. So, good point.
That's the only point I'll bring up. But, I mean, I'm not worried about Doug. I think it's still different situations, and I'm not even comparing Buddy Hield to what Danny Granger meant to that team. But I think the Pacers are in a good spot. It was a very good win. They needed this win going into the All-Star break. They've kind of stumbled their way there. But, hey, you know, 31 wins, six games above 500, far cry from where they were last year, and it really feels like they have taken that step, and it's a lot of – internal growth and making the right moves at the right time. And so, James, I'm excited to see what they can do, but ultimately I'm also just really excited for this upcoming weekend where Indiana is going to be the center of the NBA world.
Yeah, man, I got some really cool stories coming that are like Indiana, just broad, you know, broad Indiana topics where it comes to obviously Pacers specific topics, Tyrese Halliburton, kind of stalking him this weekend, hopefully to get you some inside information and just how he's kind of handling the spotlight. But being someone who covered high school basketball in the state, who basically got my start doing that. So now covering, you know, NBA All-Star weekend in the same state, you know, where basketball is like a religion here. It should be very fun. And like you said early in the pod, I would encourage everyone to just at least make it downtown. Even if it's just like take some pictures, with the big posters and signs, they have a lot of different things going on. I've seen Halliburton in like every other building. I've seen Benedict Mathurin up there, you know, Steph Curry, LeBron, all these people that, you know, you might not be able to, I guess, see in one place, so to speak. So, yeah, get out there, man, and enjoy it because, you know, All-Star Weekend in your hometown or your home city, it doesn't happen, you know, very often. And so I think Indiana's done it right with the airport, you know, court kind of setting the tone. And then from there, you know, it should be a great weekend. And I will fight to the death over this as well, Alex. There is no better city for big events logistically than Indianapolis because Indianapolis makes sense. You get downtown, you are good. You can get somebody to drop you off, and you can walk from Lucas Oil to Gainbridge Fieldhouse to the convention center to whatever you got to get to within like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so get down there, enjoy yourselves. And I'll be down there if you see me, if you see Alex, say what's up because it's going to be fun, man. It's a celebration of basketball, and I feel like what state, you know, deserves it more than the one where, you know, they've sold out. You know, I remember being in packed high school gyms on a Friday night and thinking, this is the best of the best, and now we get kind of like that souped-up version of that with superstars, obviously like LeBron, Curry, and this time around, Halliburton being in the same conversation.
And we're supposed to have decent weather, too, so that's a good thing here. And I know it's February. It's not snowing, thankfully. I know it's been snowing in New York. They've been getting those kind of snowstorms. So Indiana has thankfully had, I think, the fewest – or the, like one of the top 10 fewest amount
he
of
– He just snow. Jinxed us, y'all. We're finna get 10 inches tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to have a winter blizzard on Saturday. That'd be absolutely epic, right? So, no, but I think Indiana's going to do a great job. James is a great job covering the Pacers and the Colts for the Athletic. Make sure you guys give him a follow there. And then – social media at Romeoville Kid, right? Is it still that?
Yep. Always repping where I'm from. But again, very, very happy to have basically spent my entire career in Indiana, man. Like this has been a fun state.
Absolutely. And I will just ask you this to kind of close things out because I've got my takes on what kind of food I like, but I'm not a downtown person per se all the time. Is there like a top three places you would recommend for people to go downtown and get to?
Oh man. Kilroy's has never let me down. Very simple, you know, menu, venue, a lot of TVs. If you're into sports like I am, obviously, I think that, you know, District Tap is another one that I like to go to as well. not downtown, but I'll say the food hall, the garage hall. I think that that's like a unique place to kind of go. If you want to, if you're not from here, you can go there and get a variety of different food. But again, if you just get downtown, man, you'll be able to find something you like just because it doesn't take much to walk around and really even just ask around to what's, you know, what's cooking or what's good and things like that. So I would encourage everybody to just get out there, have some fun, be safe, obviously. But, you know, don't miss out on an opportunity that doesn't come around very often. I'm very big on that. Like, you know, I'm telling my friends now, if you see me at All-Star Weekend and I actually take a picture, take my picture, please, because I want this. I want to be able to remember where I was, because you never know, man. You think this stuff's going to be here forever. You might look up one day and be like, man, like, that was 10 years ago. And then you can say you were there to kind of document it. But I think, again, you know, the timing of it is kind of like, you know, just very fitting, really. You know, this was supposed to be a thing 3 years ago. COVID happens. You know, they basically get to like restart, do it in a better way. And you know, Tyrese is here now. So it's pretty cool to see All-Star Weekend be in a city where, you know, it kind of coincides with, you know, your star player taking off as well. I mean, Reggie Mills on the building, you know, he's been on many buildings down here, but now you got Tyrese up there and it just feels like a new era is coming with the Pacers. And, you know, after having some dog days, you know, Pacers fans feel like they deserve it.
Absolutely, James. Well, I appreciate your insight on what's good downtown, where to hang out at, and just it's a great point about the All-Star game being moved, because I kind of forgot about how COVID did push it back a couple of years, and wow, perfect timing. Everything worked out, even though that COVID year was a disaster for the Pacers with everything that happened. I think that
I covered it.
Yes, we are in a much better spot now than we were then. So once again, I appreciate it, James, and we'll have to get you back on here soon, especially to kind of recap All-Star Weekend and get your thoughts on everything that went down. So thanks again, man, and best of luck to you.
Thanks for having me, man.